publishing since 2005. You're listening to Gamertag Radio with your hosts, podcaster Hall of Famer Danny Pena, the always opinionated Paris Lilly, and from outside of the norm, Peter Toledo. This is Gamertag Radio.
Welcome to Gamertag Radio, episode 1337. This is your host, Danny Pena, and also joining me in this week's episode is the whole Gamertag Radio crew from the worldwide tour, always traveling, doing his thing. The man himself is back, Pete Productions. Pete, welcome back.
What's up, everybody? Pete's back.
What's up, man?
No, I'm doing all right, Just,
yeah.
Good to be
home. How was your tour?
2 weeks in Tokyo, 1 week in Bangkok. Can't come. Look, I think I posted something on IG earlier. It's like thankful, blessed to be able to travel as part of my job. Right? It's just it's a blessing. I mean, it's not something that if you would have asked me like 5 years ago, like if you'd be traveling the world for work and stuff like that. Not in a million years, but it's a blessing to be able to do this for my job and provide for my family and live here in Switzerland or whatever. So, yeah, man,
that's good, man.
It's dope.
All right, and also the man himself, Paris. What's up, Paris?
Hey, good morning.
Back here, Paris Lilly.
Good morning. What's up? How you doing?
Good. This is gonna be a great show, man. Actually, you know, WrestleMania. Day one just happened yesterday, and now it's day two, which I'm excited. There this week is Fallout TV series coming up. I know we got a couple events happening this week, which I'm excited. Hopefully, we're going to be talking about in the future about the series. I'm very curious to hear what Paris and also Pete have to say about Fallout. But speaking about Fallout, do you? Because there's been questions around online about favorite Fallout. Is Fallout 3 your favorite one, or the one that Obsidian worked on, New Vegas? Or is it any other Fallout game, in your opinion, Paris? Any favorite ones?
No, New Vegas. New Vegas is my favorite Fallout. Yeah, 3 is a close second. 4, I just never truly connected with. Ironically enough, I actually started playing 76. Couple days ago, and I was playing last night after WrestleMania, and help me, I need help. I have no idea what I'm doing.
Pete play that for a while? I remember when they first launched, it was buggy, but Pete, you were there playing for a while.
I was there playing for a while, yeah, with a bunch of us, but I'm right there with Paris. So New Vegas is the standout one for me. 3, okay. I'd probably say save it to 76 after that. 76
is not bad.
It's
fun. They fix a lot of things.
It did take a while though for them to fix a lot of their bugs. But I mean, and I guess it's almost par for the course these days for games, right?
I think if you have a good group, you play online, it will be dope to play that.
Oh, absolutely. That's absolutely key and critical, especially nowadays when people have spent years playing that game. It's what, 5-6 years old now?
Yeah, they added a bunch of stuff there too, man. So it's dope.
You know what it reminds me of, Pete? Like jumping in like last night, and I've seen, like, I've even had people reach it literally in real time right now, reaching out to me online about, hey, I'll help you walk you through stuff. It reminds me of back in the day with The Division. Because remember, I didn't play The Division right away. And you know, you were playing, and then I would jump in, and you're helping me out, and other people was handing me stuff, and I got the rope. So it feels like those early days with it. So I'm looking forward to it. It's honestly just finding the time to really commit to be able to jump in and play, and you know, understand the world and how everything goes. Because I'm completely freaking lost right now. I'm just wandering around. I'm just picking up everything that I can see and killing zombies and stuff. It's like I don't know what I'm doing, but. It's
not just that. It's also kind of in a weird way also like Destiny, right? Having that community out there that is like, that is so far along that when they see a new person in the wasteland, they're like, oh yeah, he's lost. He has no idea what he's doing. And then, and having that opportunity to get someone to Sherpa you through areas to get you to get like, to start to understand the mechanics and the metas and, you know, when you build stuff and like when to start your crafting and when to start building up your individual skills. That's always the best part of that multiplayer, that massively multiplayer online experience, is when you start to gain friendships with people you've never met. Hell, I mean, this happened to me a couple of months ago when I went to London for work. I met up with someone that I had been playing PUBG with for a year, and we got together, and like the next time I'm in London, like five of them are supposed to get all together and meet up. So it's, again, man, it's the beauty of video games, right? It's one thing that we, us three dinosaurs here on the screen, could probably never have imagined when we first started playing video games as wee little lads, right? Is playing with someone online or someone playing with someone in real time across the globe, and then actually meeting that person and, like, you know, shaking the hands and giving daps or a hug to someone that you've spent hours with, that all is just a voice in a headset, and it's the coolest. Really, it really is the coolest experience.
Well, everyone, head over right now to gamertagradio.com. Listen to our past episodes. Also, you can find us on any podcast app. Just search for Gamertag Radio. We're there, and subscribe, follow us, and you know will be helpful too. Post a review. It will help us climb to the top of the charts. What, Paris? I'm in the middle of promo.
You notice, Pete? Whenever we tell these stories like that, Danny never cares. He just moves on. He just moves on. He never adds anything to it. He says, Gamertag Radio, go over here and leave a review. He's like, I don't care about your little stories about collaboration. None of that.
Look, man, I'm trying to promote. We only have a certain limit of time here, man. So
this is our show. We got all the time in the world. We do what we want.
Wait, I'm the captain now, okay?
Okay, Paul.
Actually.
Hey, Pete, shut up.
All right. I'm the captain now.
Oh, my God.
Deleted him from the website.
He took me out. Oh, God. All right. So, also, if you'd like to be part of our family discussion, here's how you could contact us.
Send us your feedback or questions. Give us a call at 786-273-7GTR. Email us at fanmail@gamertagradio.com or leave a message on speakpipe.com/gamertagradio.
All right, so I've been posting some questions the past couple of weeks now on Spotify. And you can go right now if you're listening to through the Spotify app. I have a weekly poll there on every episode. And the last one, I mean, there's like multiple questions. But the last one, we had a conversation about the Xbox handheld. And here's the result so far. 60 asked, are you interested in buying an Xbox handheld? 62.5% say yes, 12.5% said no, and 25% said maybe. I'm not surprised that people want an Xbox handheld. I know we've talked about this for a while now. Parents, your thoughts? 62.5% say yes, they will buy an Xbox handheld. Your thoughts?
Of course. It's time. It's way overdue. The Steam Deck has proven there is an audience out there that would like to play AAA, well, the Switch, to keep it real. But handhelds have been proven that if you can replicate the console experience at a AAA level on there, there's an audience for it, and they're willing to spend the money to buy it. So I think Xbox has a golden opportunity right now to be able to jump into that arena, whether they're making their own hardware or they're partnering up with these third-party manufacturers, you know, for these PC handhelds and providing a curated experience for their games on it. Just makes sense. I mean, Phil Spencer himself is telling you this is the path that they're going down. So, yeah, I'm expecting to see something in the next, probably with the start of whatever their next gen is going to be, for an Xbox handheld, being a part of that.
What about you, Pete? Thoughts?
All right, look, I mean, you saw how quickly most of us ran out to grab a Steam Deck, right? A Steam Deck. Mm-hmm. Hell, just this last trip that I was in Tokyo, one of my guys was feverishly running through Akihabara trying to find a Steam Deck because he had heard that I had bought one and, you know, I had brought it and he saw it and he was just like, man, this is amazing. We ended up at like three or four different shops. I think it was Big Camera in Akihabara, and he actually picked it up. I'd never played it. He had only heard about it. He was looking at the MSI one. He was looking at, you know, the Ally because he just couldn't find one and didn't want to spend three times the price in his hometown of Bangkok. So he literally spent more time in the loading screen than actually moving the character around in Death Stranding on the Steam Deck, and was like, that's it, I'm done. That's it. I'm going to another city tomorrow when we're off and I'm going to buy one. Like it was that impressive to him to see how quickly he was able to just boom, you know, just like, yep, this is it. This is exactly what I need to do. And he went out and bought it. And he's like a fat kiwi cake right now, man. He's loving life with that thing. To answer your question, it's like a long form way of answering your question. Absolutely. I think Microsoft's the only one that hasn't tried to put one out, at least put the Endeavor out and see what happens, right? You miss 100% of the shots, as they say, that you don't make, right? So put it out there, right? And if anything, they've shown that their operating system works. It's literally Windows on a laptop, just in a smaller form. And I think we're at a stage where technology is strong enough now where it's possible, right, to put it in a smaller form factor. That's, I mean, I don't know about trying to play on a Surface tablet, but I'm sure it's from a tech spec perspective, it's plausible, right? And if you're doing it over cloud, it's even easier, right? Because you're not even leveraging a lot of the hardware, the resources on the local device. But putting it on a small form handheld type of platform, I think it does have a chance. But like I said, at least try it, right? See what happens.
Yeah, I honestly, if that happens, day one for me, I'll definitely will get this, man. I mean, people have been requesting this since the original Xbox, man, you know? Mm-hmm. So since those days, and Xbox was like, I don't know if it's the right time, because, you know, Nintendo were dominating for years with the handheld market. So, but yeah, I think now it's like the right time to do it, you know. So we'll see. Hopefully we get to hear something this year. If not, then who knows, you know? But we'll see. All right. So, and I'm gonna start with this question because I know Paris has something to do with this conversation. hey, it happened during the Xcast. I have to ask this question about, you know, Xbox supposedly going to be planning to show or announce the next Gears game during the Xbox showcase. I think it was where you were talking with Jeff Grubb on Xcast this past week, and he mentioned it briefly. You know, I know you guys were joking around, but it popped up. But, you know, some people were saying, that is this a leak? Or this was a joke? Or this is real? What this is about? What this is about?
I could be so messy right now. I'm gonna try not to be. But on Xcast, Jeff Grubb was on, and you know we're doing speculation, talking about showcase, what Xbox's future is, you know, etc. And we got on the topic of Gears and. You know, I was speculating that I could see them teasing it at the showcase this year. But I would imagine that if next gen Xbox is really holiday 2026, it probably would be a launch title for Gears or for the next Gear 6 would be a launch title for the next Xbox. And then Grubb came in and said, you know, he heard that they might be showing something with Gear 6 this summer. And then jokingly was like, here's a scoop for it, right? And, you know, I obviously teased it out ahead of time. And just so people know, when I did tease that out on social media, someone from Xbox reached out to me and asked me, hey, what did Jeff say? And when I told them what Jeff said, they were like, oh, okay, that's fine. Not a big deal. And then obviously the episode came out and it is what it is. because it's not 100% ironclad. Obviously, he's saying might. That means it could happen. It could not happen. I mean, we'll obviously see the showcase, you know, this June, you know, mm-hmm. some people in this industry who loves to leak stuff tried to say I was leaking something when I wasn't. But hey, we'll leave that there. Tom Henderson.
But yeah. It wasn't a leak. That was not a leak.
No, it's not a leak.
It's not a leak at all.
Tom Henderson does not like me because I don't like that Tom Henderson bragged years ago about how he doesn't sign NDAs because he'd rather just leak everything. And I'm going to curse Danny, sorry, but I told him that was shitty.
Oh, great.
And then he responded back saying that Gamertag Radio and kind of funny. You talk about leaks all the time. So I told him, stop leaking shit and we'd have nothing to talk about. So when he saw I tweeted that out, he wanted to be very sarcastic and tried to cause a ruckus. And I DM'd him and we had a conversation and I'll leave it at that. But yeah, I mean, we'll obviously see this summer if Gear 6 actually does get teased. It would just make sense. It's time. I think it's time. It would make a lot of sense to see it at this point. And after... GDC, we saw the Amy Hennig game, 1943, which Captain America and Black Panther running on Unreal 5. Hellblade 2 is about to come out on Unreal 5. Immortals of Avion is already out on Unreal 5. Outside of Epic themselves, we already know the Coalition, they're the GOAT when it comes to Unreal Engine. So I've seen some other teases and whispers that if you think what we've seen with Hellblade 2 is impressive, wait until you see Gear 6. And along those lines, even when I had speculated about it online during GDC about what could Gear 6 look like on Unreal 5, somebody from the Coalition actually replied to me and just simply said, yep, which tells me, oh, yeah, they know they're cooking something right now. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I'm excited for it. I think that would be a big deal for Xbox to be able to tease Gears. I'm not expecting Gears this year. I'm not expecting Gears of War Collection or anything like that. I mean, it could happen. But to just tease it, let us know, officially say, yep, Gear 6 is a thing coming from the Coalition. We'll get it in a couple years. I think that's all they need to do.
Yeah, well, what's the last... What year was the last Gears?
2019.
Wait.
Was Gears 5... Gears 5 was, what, 2018, right?
2019 Gears 5. 2016 was Gears of War 4, and then we had Gears 5 was, well, both of them were developed by Coalition, and then they did the Bro. Ultimate Edition, and then Gears Tactics.
That's a long time. Yeah, it's time. It's time to show something. Yeah, totally agree. Now with this, everything now with Activision, you know, now it's official part of the Xbox brand, everything. Are we also going to see a new Call of Duty during the Xbox showcase? Or you think they're going to still have like a separate Activision thing, like Bethesda, or everything just together at the same time? Just show something.
I think you at least confirm the next Call of Duty at the showcase, but then you have we'll have more details with a separate event, because Call of Duty on its own is a big deal. I don't think you need to dedicate an extreme amount of time during the June showcase to Call of Duty, because it can have its own event just for the multiplayer alone, let alone the campaign stuff. So I would imagine they keep that tradition of how we've seen Call of Duty presented, maybe, you know, announce it officially there, but then we get a bigger, deeper dive with its own separate event later in the year.
Yeah, I agree with that. Actually, for those that listen to the podcast, we're going to play an interview later. We sat down with Sledgehammer. We were at an event here in LA where they were showing us, you know, what's coming for season 3 of Call of Duty, you know, all multiplayer stuff. And we also got to watch the Godzilla movie, right? That came out, was it last week, 2 weeks ago, something like that. So we got to see that early at the IMAX theater. That was a lot of fun. And we also got to play Call of Duty on the IMAX screen, which was really cool. And I'm going to play that interview. It's all about multiplayer. It's coming out later on this episode of GTR. So, all right. So next topic. And here's something that I'm very curious to. P, I don't know if you got to read the hands-on impressions from media. It was like only major media got to play Hellblade 2. They went to actually to the studio to try out the game. Xbox invited them to go. There was no content creators or anything like that. It was just major media outlets. And it sounds like the game is very positive, great looking game. Now, I noticed that the people that read this hands-on preview, hands-on impressions, really focused on the whole 30 FPS and 60 FPS and all that stuff. Like, because on Xbox, the console's version is going to be 30 FPS. PC, of course, is going to be different. But even if it's 30 FPS or not, like, I honestly, that's like my most anticipated game so far this year that I want to play is Hellblade 2, in my opinion, for me. I don't know how it is for you guys, but I'm excited that's coming up very, very soon. So does it matter? I mean, we talk about this, like, I don't know how many times for years that, yo, like, the 30 FPS, 60 FPS, I don't care about that, yo. I just want the experience. Is it good or not? Is it fun? You know, the first Hellblade was amazing, and I think this one's going to be even better. You know, so I just want to hear your thoughts, guys. If you read the hands-on impressions from other media outlets about the game, I know, P, you want to go first or Paris?
No, I'll talk about it first. I don't think it matters, right? I don't care what anybody else has to say. Everybody's going to need to find that little nitpick just to make their post or their website or whatever stand out.
Sure.
Me personally, you know, I've been a fan of Ninja Theory and Hellblade going back years, right? When we first interviewed Dominic for GTR at E3.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, it's been a minute. Yeah. You know, we've been on board. We've been on Senua's, you know, bandwagon for a minute. And for, you know, it's been warranted, right? The first one was an amazing game. The second one is highly anticipated by damn near everybody, right? And the people that, you know, the naysayers, the grifters, as Paris like to say, the grifters, they need something to complain about. They need something to all right, this is probably gonna be the bleep show. They need something to bitch about on the, you know, on their stream, on their podcast, on their videos. They need something to complain about just to stand out and just to try to make an impact or go viral. But it doesn't matter. Those people don't matter. What matters is that you, looking at the camera, talking to those of you that are listening to the show, as long as you enjoy the game is all that matters.
Okay. I don't know what's going on with everybody's face. Everybody's like, all serious. All right, Paris, about you, man. In 30 FPS, let's go.
So, I've reached a point on social media that I can say the sky is blue, and people are just going to be mad at this point, right? So, I said something about, basically, we've been on this merry-go-round of 30 FPS plenty of times over the years. And at the end of the day, I've resigned myself to the fact that I do not have an expectation with this current hardware for 60 FPS. Sure, you can do performance modes and get to 60 FPS, but then you still got people complaining, oh, well, you lowered the resolution down to 720p and you upscaled it. Now it's blurry and this and that. And, you know, it's not perfect. You're not getting the true quote unquote visual fidelity when you do a 60 FPS mode, with a performance mode, I should say, right? Because you're making some kind of compromise to be able to do that. Because if you weren't making a compromise, you wouldn't have a performance mode. You see what I'm saying? So when it comes to Hellblade 2, and this kind of just leans back into part of the reason why I think Gear 6, if it is a thing, we don't see it until the next gen Xbox. Unreal 5 cannot do 60 frames per second on this current hardware. Just can't. Show me the example where it does. It doesn't. And because of that, I think this is the true reason why Ninja Theory decided, well, we're going to lock in at 30. Because look at the game. Look at the previews. Look at what people are saying about it. They're telling you this is a truly next generation experience from a visual standpoint. It's what Hellblade 2 is. It's going to be a showcase for them on what the Series X can do from a visual standpoint. If you sacrifice, because here's what I think. I'm pretty sure Ninja Theory could have created a performance mode at 60 frames for Hellblade 2. But guess what? You do that. Again, going back to Pete's standpoint, and I'm not saying this is the 100% factor in this, but I guarantee you it's part of it. To Pete's point, if there was a 60 frames per second performance mode for Hellblade 2, you already know what YouTube and social media is going to do. They're going to play it in that performance mode, and then they're going to complain that it's a visual downgrade. See, it's what they showed us in 2019 and 2020 isn't what the game is. It's downgraded because now you're playing in the performance mode. When in 30 frames per second mode, they're obviously saying this lives up to everything that we've told you that the game's going to be from a visual standpoint. We know how it works. That's why. And I will say again, and I know the console wars never loves to hear this, but it's true. Y'all play games on Nintendo Switch. They're all 30 frames per second. I don't see nobody complaining. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
My thing is this, and I know I'm being a little messy today, but if frame rate, of course we would love everything to truly be 4K 60 frames. Of course. No one's arguing that. But if frame rate is truly that big of a deciding factor for you, for your enjoyment of a video game, go build a PC. Period. That's what PC's for. Because you can throw money at the problem and build the beefiest, tankiest, 120 frames at 4K per second experience, whatever you want, you can do. That's what PC is for. But if you're expecting a $500 console to be able to give you a consistent 4K 60 frames per second experience, you're fooling yourself. You just are. They're not doing it. And trust me, I have my own complaints about that. Because I do think the marketing and the messaging, especially coming in this generation, you know how much I've complained about the last generation, made us think that this was going to be a reality. And it's just simply not. But I also know this. I'm just going to go there. I've seen over the past few days, people love to pull the tweet from 2020 where Aaron Greenberg was talking about 60 frames and all that on the Xbox. What they fail to do is him 4 days later clarifying that tweet and going, we're not mandating that. It is up to the creators themselves on how they want to use the hardware. So in other words, I am not going to sit here and tell a dev that you have to do it at 60 frames if that's not their creative vision. If they feel like the experience we want you to have and the stability that we want the game to have on this hardware is at 30 frames, who am I to argue that? I'm not smart enough to make a video game. So who am I to argue that? I'm not going to argue that. I'm going to say, okay. So we had Todd Howard on XCast last year. I asked him point blank, why don't you have a performance mode for Starfield on console? And he explained why. It's part of their creative vision. They probably could have done it. Maybe they still will at some point. Who the frick knows? But he said, for the experience that they're trying to give for that game, 30 frames made the most sense on that hardware. So we can argue it all day and console wars and this and that and blah, blah, blah. And I get I'm old. I'm grew up playing games at 30 frames or even less back in the day. You know what I'm saying? So it never stopped me from enjoying a great game. Now, I understand if frame rate's all over the place and it's a slideshow, that's one thing. But if it's locked in and it's consistent at a certain frame rate and the game's great, I'm going to go play it. And that's all I'm saying. And like I said, I know people love to bring up their ridiculous console war stuff. And, oh, well, PlayStation, they have this many. I get performance mode. But let's take as an example, Horizon Forbidden West has a performance mode at 60 frames. You can also do the 40 FPS stuff and all that. But let's just say, for argument's sake, 60 frames, they have performance mode. But guess what? If you drop it to 30, visually the game actually looks better because there's more bells and whistles and lighting and everything turned on. That's what I'm talking about. To get 60 frames on this current hardware, you have to make some sacrifice. And in the case of Hellblade 2, Ninja Theory didn't want to make that sacrifice from a visual fidelity standpoint. It really just comes down to that. And you can argue it till you're blue in the face, but I know this, I'm playing Hellblade 2. Because I ain't playing it because it's in 60 frames. I'm playing it because of the story that they obviously told in the first one. And if anything, you should be playing Hellblade for the audio experience. That's why they tell you exactly to wear headphones. That's the point of that game. And if it's mm-hmm. super pretty and looks amazing at the same time, great. I am not worrying about 30 frames. And like I said, it's to Pete's point, these straw man arguments that we have about 30 versus 60 and all that, it's just people on the internet fussing. The average person, they're not going to be overly concerned about that. I'm telling you now. Now, if this is a game, a multiplayer game where, you know, frame rate is going to matter from a competitive standpoint, then yes, I can see being upset about having to play a game at 30 frames on multiplayer. But they don't even do that now. Call of Duty is going to be at 60 frames. Halo Infinite is at 60 frames. They're going to make sure that the multiplayer experience is at 60 frames. And what happens most times on console, they reduce the visual fidelity on the multiplayer side versus on the campaign side so they can make sure they can lock it in at 60. That's what happens. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like I said, people love to argue it and back and forth, but ultimately it's just about online engagement more than anything else versus the reality of enjoying a video game.
And I was going to ask you guys this. Do you think, because usually we've been to a lot of events from like companies, especially for Xbox. It was very surprising seeing that only major media got invited to this. And I think it was because of that whole 30 FPS and 60 FPS, in my opinion, I think. Because I think it's easier to control the message on having a smaller group of people than having a massive group attending this event. And I think it was a smart move by doing that, I think, because all the articles that I read, I think one of them was IGN, that it said best looking game ever, something best graphics ever, something like that for an Xbox. Because usually when we get to see like a, I think it was Redfall Paris. We went to the Redfall. There was a lot of content creators there and a lot of major media outlets there. And I felt like it was all over the place with that, you know? So I think it was smart for Xbox to do that, having a smaller group. What's up? Go ahead.
Now, let me give you the counter to that since you brought up Redfall. That argument's valid, in my opinion, because they told us it was going to be 60 frames, and then at the last minute said it wasn't. Yeah. Even on the actual retail box, it said 60. Now, they've patched it since, but that one, that's legit. That is something legit to, quote unquote, be upset about or complain about, because that's false advertising. Whereas you told me it was going to be 60, and then you wait until damn near the very last minute to then say, well, actually, we're not going to be able to hit that right now. It's only 30. So that I understand, but at no point did Ninja Theory ever tell you the game was 60 frames per second. True. On console.
Hell, they even delayed development, right? Because they wanted to switch from UE4 to UE5. So, I mean, that just goes to tell you what they were doing. They realized, look, what we're trying to achieve isn't going to be possible. Let's just pull back. Let's start over again for, you know, whatever. Again, I'm not a developer. None of us are developers. We don't know the whole process of what was necessary. But that goes to show you. And then further to what Paris was saying, have we even gotten a Gen 5, a next gen game with this generation? I don't know if we have. Like, you could say, oh, it wasn't Starfield. It wasn't Starfield. Starfield didn't feel like a next gen game to me. So for everyone complaining about, oh, it's all the FPSs, and I say that looking at my way too many $1,000 PC sitting next to me, we haven't gotten a game that is truly next gen, that blasts it, that puts every other game to shame, right? So I mean, if anything, we're finally going to be getting a next gen title 4 or 5 years into the cycle, when they're getting when PlayStation's getting ready to pull out the PlayStation Plus, or, you know, Pro, or whatever the hell they're going to call it. So I mean, let's really think about that. I mean, you know, we're being told that we're playing in next gen, but we haven't gotten a next-gen game yet.
Well, we'll see. I, I'm very curious to see how Hellblade is going to look. I'm definitely going to play the PC version, also the console version. I'll play both. We'll see. But all right, the last question, the last topic, I mean, and I don't know, I'm going to look at Paris. Paris, I have a theory. I have a theory, bro. I have a feeling this news I'm about to bring up, I think it was because of you, but that's just me. Nobody, Paris never mentioned this
it's
to me or anything
fault,
like that.
Paris. It's all your fault, Paris. Here we go again.
So I'm going to go back. I can't remember the tweet, but I think it was a question because I think the conversation about this was before the Xbox business update came up, and Paris mentioned about game preservation. He mentioned this, and I think they also grabbed your tweet and they asked that question during the business update. And now look at this. And shout out to Jez and Windows Central exclusive. Xbox President Sarah Bond has set up a new team dedicated to game preservation. Paris, what happened, bro? That was you. That conversation started because of you, yo. I'm just saying, but... What do you think about that news, man? Paris, they set up a whole new team. I think this is great news. As a fan of this, game preservation is important. More companies should be doing this, in my opinion.
It's 2024, right?
Yes.
So the first time I met you was in 2006. So bad math, I have known you for 18 years, right? Do we you agree on that? I've known you for 18 years.
Yeah.
I'm seriously starting to question if I want to know you for 19. Why do you keep doing this?
Huh? I'm just saying.
Why do you keep doing this?
I'm just saying.
I'm sitting here minding my own business. And you drag me into this. Why are you dragging me in? There was no need to drag me into this. You could have just said, Sarah Bond is starting a new team about game preservation. But what do you do? What do you do?
I'm just asking questions.
And you blame me. You blame me for this.
I'm just asking questions. That's all. Okay. That's all. That's all I'm asking questions.
Okay, Tucker Carlson, you're just asking questions. Okay. Okay. Nah, but being serious. And we talked about this during DICE, actually. At the time, because, yeah, I tweeted that out. I kind of had my checklist of what I wanted them to at least address in the business update. And we may or may not have gotten a little confirmation that, yeah. They saw what I said along with what some other people said and made sure that that was added in there. But I mean, this is good news, and this is exactly what Xbox should be doing. And I'm happy to see that Sarah Bond is dedicating a team to make sure that there's game preservation, because like it or not, physical copies are going away. They're probably going away in the next generation of gaming. We are going to have an all digital gaming future. It's just going to happen. So to be able to figure out a way to preserve our legacy titles that we already own and be able to bring them with us onto to new platforms and to new hardware is a good thing. So there's nothing negative about this at all. This is a win-win. I hope with Xbox kind of leading the way on this, we see PlayStation and do it. Look, we know Nintendo would be like, no, you're buying it again. We know what Nintendo's gonna do. But no, this is great news. This is good to see that, you know, I can have some reassurance about my investment into my digital library over the years that I know I'm still gonna have access to those games. So it's a good thing. It will be interesting to see how they handle, more specifically, I would say the 360 era, where there obviously was still a huge, because like I still have the Red Dead Redemption, the first one, on disc. That's how I own that game. So can I have that game on disc and be able to somehow transfer that license into a digital copy or something? I don't know. Or they're going to have a add-on, like PlayStation's already doing it technically, but have an add-on disk drive or something that I could plug in for those kind of games and be able to play it. And I mean, I don't know, you know, I'm spitballing here, obviously, but this is the whole point of creating a team to ask those questions and to brainstorm and how we're going to handle this and how we're going to make it fair, reasonable, and ease of use to access your digital games or access your legacy games, I should say, that you own, be it a physical copy or a digital copy. It ultimately may be that they're only going to support digital games moving forward. It could be. Maybe physical media does get left behind. And for that case, you are still going to have the old hardware to be able to access them. I don't know. But the fact that there's a team that's dedicated to asking those questions and figuring out a reasonable way, you know, to address it is good. That's how I see it.
Yeah. I mean, even though we just talked about Hellblade 2, that game is 100% digital. There's no physical version of that game at all. You know, and even the other day, I went to Best Buy over here locally in Los Angeles, and there was no physical games on the Xbox area. Everything was all cards where you could just buy the game, put the code into the system, and download it. You know, so seeing that was kind of weird. I'm not gonna lie, and I'm not used to that type of stuff. Like not seeing physical like that, you know. But
isn't that better though from a sustainability perspective? And isn't that one of the things that Microsoft is trying to do? And when you really think about it, e-waste is a massive thing. It's one of the reasons why we all have
Pete. We can't argue on the internet if you have a physical copy. We have to argue still. Come on. God forbid that if you play games on PC, you ain't had a physical copy in like freaking 10 years.
But let's What was the last time you had a physical game PC physical? What was the last time?
It's probably even been longer than 10 years. I mean, it's been a long time. Yeah.
Yeah. Nobody talks about that.
Yeah.
Nobody talks about that.
But, Rainbow Six Black Flag.
Yo, they'll attack, you know, Xbox, PlayStation, Nintendo when it's like only digital, no physical. Oh my god, it's like the end of the world. I'm like,
oh, wasn't it CDPR that just came out with like a floppy disk version of
joking around? Yeah, it was April Fool's.
That would be funny. That's funny. Yeah. That's funny.
Look, I get people, collectors. And wanting physical media, we're clearly seeing that on the entertainment side, on the movie television side, because you're seeing these digital stores like what Warner Brothers is doing it, Disney is doing it, where they just decide, well, we're just not the show is gone and we're just removing it from the service and you have no way to access it at all because there isn't a physical version of it that you can have. That you can keep, you know, to be able to watch a legacy thing. So I get the scary part of digital and digital libraries and licensing and, you know, the game that you have today or the movie that you have today could be gone tomorrow, you know, at the blink of an eye and you no longer have access to it. There is a reasonable argument about that. But people thinking that we're going to continue to have physical media, it's like we got to live in reality at some point of it. This stuff is going away. Now, there do need to be safeguards put in place to preserve it, which, again, is why I'm happy to see a team coming in and looking at this, you know, to kind of address those things. We do need safeguards on that. But to think that we're going to continue to have physical media, it's just not going to happen. It's not.
Yeah.
Like I said, if you live in the PC world, you've not had physical media for well over a decade. I mean, it's been a long ass time since you've had physical media. They might have sold you a box with a code in it, but it was still digital.
That was it.
Yeah, it wasn't a disc. So that's how I see it. I understand the concerns, but we got to be realistic about it. This stuff is going away.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, correction, not for PC, but the last physical copy game, probably on something on my Nintendo Switch. Actually, no, it was Nintendo Switch. It was Super Mario Galaxy or whatever, the one that came on the first Switch.
Actually, I can tell you.
Super Mario Brother World, sorry.
Yeah, I can tell you outside of a Nintendo game, the last physical disc that I have is Cyberpunk 2077. That's it. Last one.
Huh. I mean, I know this Xbox, Bethesda sent us a Starfield physical, but it was still digital.
It was a code.
You just had like the watch. Right. It was a code. Yeah,
it was a code. It wasn't a disc or anything. Yeah.
We're going to see more of that, I think, in the future. Just like that. So
Are you sure?
All right, so we're going to play this. What? Jesus. All right, so we're going to play this interview that we just recorded with Sledgehammer. We talked about the multiplayer of Call of Duty, Call of Duty Season 3 that just came out a couple days ago. So, and this was recorded in person. It was a lot of fun. So we're going to play it right now, and we'll be right back after this.
You're listening to Gamertag Radio.
My name's Adam Iskov. I'm the Senior Development Director for the multiplayer team at Sledgehammer.
Hi, my name is Michael. I'm the Senior Development Director overseeing the live operations team over here at Sledgehammer. Michael Liu.
Awesome. I'm very excited to check out Season 3. What is it are we going to get to see new now in this season?
Oh, lots of fun new maps and modes and characters and weapons and, you know, equipment, you know, you name it. You know, just like we did in Seasons 1 and 2, we're going to bring a lot of good heat for Season 3 and mid-season and, you know, halfway through. We call it 3.5, but you know how we always refresh throughout the season too.
One of the things that I like about the past seasons now too is that you guys have been experimenting with like new game modes and everything. Are we going to get to see stuff like that on this one too?
Most definitely. There have been a few that have been in play testing at the studio recently that are big hits. We're really excited to, you know, get players hands on with them. If you want, I can go into detail about them, or we can, you know, okay. Yeah. So there's one called Escort. That's really fun. Where basically you're escorting a Wilson, basically attacker and defender gameplay. Right now we're just putting the finishing touches on the design in terms of like making it as competitive as possible, but it's just it's something that we're really excited about.
I'm just gonna jump right into it. Godzilla, Kong, they're in the game, those character skins. So talk about that collaboration to bring them
alive. we're really excited with this one because this is actually our second activation directly with Legendary. We did a series during Vanguard as well, and this time we brought a few new characters into the game. So previous iteration we only had Godzilla and Kong and then also Mechagodzilla, but this time in Homage, the new movie, we still preserved Kong as well as Godzilla since they're central characters in the new movie, but we also brought two new characters in Shimo and Scar King as well. These are entirely new operator skins. We make sure they were authentic to the design elements of who these characters are. They come with really cool VFX, some of them. There's a reactive state on the Godzilla operator skin where the more kills you get, it evolves in a state kind of similar to how Godzilla kind of behaves in the movie as well. So it'll start off blue, it'll end up super pink. There's a really cool execution as well. And then we also took a lot of creative liberties with the weaponry too. So it kind of matched the stylization of the characters. So in season two, we released the Kong one for the first one. And then the other three will be included in season three, but we're really excited for this partnership because there was a lot of creative synergies here where it felt like we had even more opportunity to make stuff that was a really cool hybridization between Call of Duty and Godzilla. And I think our players really come to enjoy it.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Now I do want to circle back to the actual game that we'll be getting on April 3rd, the new season. Six maps are coming out. So can you give a little more detail on those six maps and what people can expect?
Sure. So we have a map called Emergency, which is set in a fictionalized hospital in a war zone. Really fun, really competitive 6v6 map. Another new one called Six Star that's set in a luxury hotel, sort of one of those rooftop pools and bars that you know we've all seen in hotels. We have a couple other maps coming. There's a map called Grime that is, set sort of like in the waterfront docks, also a brand new 6v6 map. I think we mentioned before too, we've taken some slices of pre-existing maps from Warzone and we're turning them into 6v6 maps. So there's a map that players will probably recognize that's sort of like around like the Zooquarium area that we've turned into a map called Tanked for 6v6. So our partners in Beanox have been handling that for us and they did a great job getting that. There's also another one come in called Checkpoint, which is sort of the security area that we've turned into a 6v6 map. So we're bringing a bunch of brand new experiences and also some familiar stuff for players who have experienced the different gameplay on the Warzone side for Core MP.
Nice. You guys also worked on the Boys, right? Was that something? How was that working on that project too for you guys?
Well, it was really fun. Kind of similar to Godzilla, that was also our second activation of the boys. We did the first one, Modern Warfare 2, last year. Mm-hmm. And then this time we were able to bring A-Train into the game. And then we also got to bring Firecracker, who's a brand new character in their new season, into the game as well. Mm-hmm. One of the fun things with the boys especially is we got to play around with limited time modes where you could actually absorb like the superhero powers and see how that looks like in the game. Mm-hmm. So that was a really interesting experience for many of our players because they got to go into MP, they got to find superpowers, they got to blast other people. So overall, it was generally a really good experience, and definitely one of the things that we like to do with our licensed IP integrations is we want to find, of course, how do we bring this world into Call of Duty, but also how do we add a twist where like you can understand this is a certain IP through the lens of Call of Duty, and it kind of allows you to play Call of Duty in a slightly different way as well, which is always which has felt very fulfilling for our player base.
Yeah, I know when you guys start like designing working on like the maps, right, and multiplayer. After the game's releases, have you guys been surprised of all these stuff like the gamers been discovering in the game while playing the multiplayer?
Yeah,
maps?
I mean, we're very close to our community, and we love to hear how people get excited for maps that we've released, like Meat came out season one or Stash House season two. So we're giving the players a variety of experiences, like some that really like those smaller maps. We're also doing bigger maps like Vista came out, and we're also really working closely with CDL and the esports community to make sure that the maps that we are designing with a competitive aspect in mind get put into the rotation for esports, so we'll see them at some of the majors still left to do in this year's season. We'll see some of the new maps that came out post-launch hopefully rotate into CDL, which is really cool.
Awesome. That's awesome. So one thing, and you know, we've all been playing Call of Duty forever at this point, but thinking about the multiplayer, I'm thinking about this season specifically, are there any updates or improvements to progression when I think about the social experience that you can have in the game versus the ranked? Is there anything new, rewarding that you can expect in the game?
That's a great one. In terms of what we're putting out for season three, I'm going to have to go back to the roadmap real quick and just like, you know, chat with the social team specifically about that. I'm not sure if you have anything off the top of your head.
Yeah. One thing that we really want to focus on when it comes to player experience going into season three is the feeling of being with friends in a party and you actually benefiting from that experience.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
So one of the things that we added actually going to season three is the concept of a party, a bonus. So you get additional bonus multipliers onto your battle pass XP or your player XP or your weapon XP when you're in a party, and that gets augmented the more people that you're playing with, right? And so it's this one large social event for season three where, of course, like we want to celebrate people playing Call of Duty first and foremost, but we also want to focus on the point where come with your friends. It's going to be a very enjoyable experience. And then we also want to reward you for playing with your friends, right? Because ultimately, like the more the merrier, and kind of like the tagline that we've been saying in our trailers, you know, leave no friend behind, right?
Yeah.
So definitely looking forward to what the community response is, because we definitely want to make sure they're being properly rewarded for the investment they're putting in here. And we think season three especially might hit that home.
That's fantastic. Now you brought up the battle pass, so I do want to dive into that for a second.
Sure.
And I'm blanking on the name of what we just saw in the trailer, but it was like the wolf, something wolf. What was that?
There is a wolf.
Yeah.
There definitely was a wolf. It may or may not be our tier 100 final completion.
Okay.
It is a Makarov skin. So there's a deep canonical layer of like what the wolf symbol means to Makarov as a character. And he's also the face of our season going to season three as well. So it's the first time we feature Makarov to this extent. And he's one of our the antagonists within our single player campaign too. So we want to make an extraordinary event. Of course, there's the Black Cell variant too, if you're familiar with the Black Cell offering. So there's a gold, black and gold out version. And then you may have noticed that we had a very creative version of Snoop Dogg too, as part of the Black Cell offering too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So definitely a lot to look forward from a content perspective. And then we also explored a lot of things creatively to be a little bit more grounded in military with some fantastical elements, but you'll see, especially with this season's battle pass creatively, it will be very different from previous ones. But we're looking forward to how the fans respond to it.
Yeah, I just love too that, you know, just with my one account, I could switch on different modes and it's a lot easier that I could still, even though I'm not playing multiplayer, if I play Warzone, I still could get experience points and upgrade my character and
everything
like that. So how's it been working with the other teams that worked on, you know, mobile, Warzone, zombies. How's it been that the process for you?
Oh, they're great partners. So we work very closely with Treyarch for zombies and Beanox and Raven and Hyman Studios for Warzone. And everything we do when it comes to seasonal content, especially, like we want to make sure like everyone's included part of the journey when it comes to what we're creating, right? Mm-hmm. We want to be very intentional when it comes to why we are deciding to include certain content within the seasonal update. Of course, there's always going to be content catered to the core audience. Like we'll have core 6v6 maps, we'll have core small maps or big maps for Warzone. There's going to be core story zombies content. But there's also this element where we want to make sure there's some synergy on what the seasonal theme is supposed to represent and what the engagement of those players going through those modes are kind of like experiencing. That's different from the core game, tied to the seasonal theme. Might be some through some events. So we oftentimes leverage events on a weekly or biweekly cadence where regardless of the player type, you get to see this really cool moment, you get rewarded for that moment, and you can also engage in that event through the individual game that you're playing as well. So generally speaking, it's been a pleasure working with them. It always has been. And then it's oftentimes just this huge melting pot of positive creative energy where ultimately at the end of the day, we just want to make some really cool stuff that players will enjoy. And definitely we've been learning a lot from the initial seasons. That's led to a lot of what we created for season three that I think a lot of people will be really excited about.
Yeah, I have two more questions. So one is, how long this season is going to last?
8 weeks.
8 weeks. Yes. After that, any other plans, like world map? You guys have said anything about it or not?
We're just going to cut it off right after season three. I'm just kidding.
Okay.
I mean, we'll see. We'll see. I'm sure there's going to be, lots more news in store.
awesome. And my last question is, I know there's been modes that you guys only had it for like a limited time, and some of them are like fan favorites. Ooh. Are you guys planning to bring it back as a surprise or anything
That's
like that?
That's a great idea. Maybe we should talk about that. Yeah, I can neither confirm nor deny the return of some fan favorite modes. But when modes have come out that are big hits, we hear it, we listen, and we love them too. We love playing them. So we talk about, hey, do we want to potentially bring this back one day? It's good to know. Like right now we have some plans for some great new modes that we want players to experience. But we also know we have a lot more great stuff to put out. And if there's some fan favorite stuff that wants to come back, like just like fan favorite maps or fan favorite operators, we look at all that. Nothing's off the table.
That actually just leads me into my final question. This might wrap it up. I hope this doesn't take too long to answer. But community feedback, going from season to season, as you do with listening to what the community's liking, because you kind of touched on that. But I'm thinking even taking it to a deeper level as far as weapon balancing, map choices as you go into a new modes, equipment, things like that. I mean, how important is that going from season to season, community feedback?
Oh, it's absolutely fundamental to what we do every day. We listen to, everything from hardcore players on Twitter and Reddit to, like I said, the CDL community, to people that really play our game every day. And we want to make sure they're having fun. And if there's something that a lot of people are starting to complain about or worry about, if weapon balancing, for example, we're absolutely looking at that with the weapons design team. And we are just, doing some internal discussion around what we want to do and when we can push it out to the live environment and make sure it's all done properly and tested, so we're not just pushing stuff out willy-nilly, but it's like, okay, here's the right balance, here's the new patch, we can get it out live on this date, and then we message that out to the communities to let people know. And I think our community relations team has done a great job this year being as specific as possible to like weapon by weapon, individual balance values in terms of like recoil and, all the stuff that players care about is right there in the patch notes. So, we're very interested in keeping that relationship healthy and strong and transparent. Just keep the feedback coming is what I would say.
Yeah. And I would just say to follow up on that, because that's kind of my thing. Look, I'm not good. Okay, I'm going out there to die. That's what I go do when I go play Call of Duty.
Nothing
but like you're saying, you have your hardcore audience, you have your more casual audience, like someone like myself, finding that balance of, because we know how it goes, whatever the new meta is, that's what the hardcore audience is going to use because that's how they win, versus someone like me coming in, we're like, what do I do with a gun, figuring out, okay, this meta's become too powerful. Now you're creating this barrier to entry for more casual or new players coming in, but then you might piss off the hardcore audience because you're taking away.
I think we try to strike the right balance between doing stuff for casual people. I'm the same way. Like I like to play as Nicki Minaj, and nobody's winning a match as Nicki Minaj. She's in hot pink and high heels, and so I get seen a mile away and killed, but I don't care. I like it. You know, it's fun. The players that are the really hardcores who want to win every match are taking a different operator, a different loadout, and they're chasing the meta, like you said, all that stuff. So we have so much stuff in the game that like you can just have fun as a casual player, like you or me, or you can have fun as like a hardcore, sweaty, you know, competitive person who just wants to grind. So we're putting out enough stuff where I feel like whoever you are, you're going to have fun.
That's awesome. That's it. Well, hey, gentlemen, thank you. Appreciate you taking the time to talk to us about season 3, which is coming out on April 3rd, 2024.
Yeah,
you heard cross-play it. All platforms. Woo! It's going to be great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
This is Gamertag Radio. Voicemail at 786-2737-GTR.
All right, so we're back here. Gamertag Radio. Shout out to Activision, also Sledgehammer, for giving us the opportunity to record this interview. It was a lot of fun. And anything else before we wrap it up? Paris,
yes,
hands up.
Actually, I want to go back to the physical media thing because I was thinking about this too. I probably like the last time I was like actually buying physical discs versus just getting a digital copy. Remember when Amazon used to do this thing where they would give you like a 10 or 15% discount on a game if you bought the physical copy from them. So I just specifically remember in the 2010s taking advantage of that a lot. Like the last other physical disc that I have, like PlayStation games, like it was Uncharted, you know, but stuff like that where I would go, oh, well, I could save some money if I've got the physical version of it versus buying the digital. Because I got it through Amazon. Hey, and when they stopped doing that, I was done. All in on digital at that point. Yeah.
You know, that was my last one. It was actually the first Spider-Man game. I got it through the Amazon. Yeah. You have to be a Prime member to get that percentage off.
Yeah, you had to be Prime. Yeah.
Yeah. But the reason why I stopped, I got the games 2 days after launch. I'm like, wait a minute. I thought I was going to get it the day of. And they took forever. I didn't like that. And I stopped. You know, so... Yeah, it was like, I think it was 15% off, I think it was.
Yeah, it was something like that. I have in my head, because remember, that was when games were still $60. But I remember feeling like I was getting games with free shipping for like $50. It was something like that. Mm-hmm. And I was like,
that was a great deal.
Yeah, it was a good deal.
Yeah, pretty good deal. So, all right, so we're going to wrap it up here. If there's anything else, we're good, right? Yeah. Do the after show. That's about it. All right, everyone. Thank you for listening to episode 1337. I have more stuff coming up here at GTR, and plus Summer Game Fest in June. That's gonna be a lot of fun. And we'll talk more about that once it gets closer. So, all right. So until next time, everyone. We're out. Peace. Later.
Thanks for listening to Gamertag Radio. Be sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.